It's the morning show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. In 2014, the U.S. saw an influx of children from Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. They were escaping civil war and sometimes near certain death. What happened to those children and to children who cross the border today, with or without their parents? With us this hour to suss that out are two immigration experts. Fatima Maarouf is the director of the Immigration Rights Clinic at Texas A&M. She's on the front lines of deportation cases every day. And Nino Garuli is a lecturer and international human rights fellow at the University of Chicago. Her team worked with the ACLU to put together the report on abuse in detention centers. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie.
We're taking your calls this hour also on immigrants. What do you think of the way children are being treated as they cross the border? Should they be separated from their families simply for crossing the border? Should we have this zero tolerance policy? 1-800-642-1234 is our number. Ideas at WPR.org is our email, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So I want to get this clear in listeners' minds before we start our conversation. We have three issues here. Children being separated from their parents at the border when they cross the border. We also have an issue of 1,500 kids who were previously placed, mostly with family, who the government is unable to connect with. And we have allegations of abuse in detention facilities. So, Fatima, let's start with these quote-unquote missing kids. This and the taking of the kids at the border, this is not the same story, right?
Right. These are two completely different issues that I think have just been conflated by the public. So the 1,500 children that were supposedly lost were not really lost. Basically, what happened is these are unaccompanied minors who come in without their parents, and the Office of Refugee Resettlement places them with sponsors who are often parents or family members. So they placed about 7,600 kids, and 30 days later, they called back the families that they had placed the kids with, and in about 1,500 cases, they didn't receive a response within 30 days. So it could be that those families just didn't call them back. We don't know that those kids are actually lost or missing. And so it wasn't that ORR sort of misplaced these children. It's just that they didn't get a call back from the parents 30 days later.
And it could be that the parents or the family members they're with are themselves undocumented and are afraid to answer the phone.
Absolutely.
The other part of this is, where did these kids come from? Are they still coming in from the Central American Triangle there?
They are still coming in. There's been a drop in unaccompanied minors coming in, so most of the kids coming in now are coming with parents, one or more parents or family members.
Is this a change, though, from before Trump took office? There were a lot of kids that started coming in 2014.
Yeah, so that sort of massive influx of 2014 started dropping off the following year and has continued to drop off in terms of unaccompanied minors, although we still have them coming in. It's not in the same volume.
When when news reports started coming out that we, quote-unquote, lost 1,500 kids, a lot of people immediately went to, oh, my God, they're being trafficked. There was actually a time when we found that some children who had migrated here had been trafficked, correct?
Correct.
So talk to
me about
that. Yeah,
there were about at least 8 kids who were trafficked. This was a labor trafficking situation, and the traffickers were prosecuted. But we don't know. We don't really know how many of these kids might actually be trafficked or be in dangerous situations. So we only know sort of the cases where there have been apprehensions and prosecutions.
So talk to me about the reason that kids are coming across the border, the reason they started coming across the border in 2014 from Central America in particular.
The gangs are one of the major reasons. So these are some of the most deadly countries in the world, highest homicide rates. Children, starting from a pretty young age of, 11, 12, begin to be sort of recruited and targeted by gangs, extorted. Women are sort of raped into joining the gang sometimes, threats of death against their parents. So that's one of the main reasons You know, the other one is extreme poverty. Huge volumes of domestic violence has been one of the main reasons causing both women and children to flee. Many of the cases we've seen involve very severe domestic violence where people were almost killed, and, you know, many members of the family being abused, boys as well as girls, physically as well as sexually. So it's you know, one of the main reasons people are seeking asylum here.
By members of their own family or by...
Often by members of their own family. By others, yeah.
And are some of these, can we classify some of these kids that are being recruited into gangs as child soldiers? Is there a war that's being fought, or is this just gang warfare? Is there chaos?
I mean, the gangs actually control large amounts of territory in some of these countries, like El Salvador and Honduras. So it is almost like a civil war. You know, one of the issues, though, is that the government, even though it might be trying to fight the gangs at the highest levels, isn't really able to control them. So the gangs have effective control over the territory, and there's extensive corruption within the police and as well as prosecutors and judges. So it's very hard to hold the gang members accountable for their crimes, and they're also scared of the gang members. So many of, you know, the people fleeing don't even want to go to the police there because they don't believe, you know, rightfully that anything will happen to whoever's targeting them.
So they come to the U.S. because they think that they can be safe here in the U.S. They cross over perhaps with their families. And then what is happening here now?
So what's happening since April, the Attorney General announced this sort of zero tolerance policy for people entering the U.S., saying that they would be criminally prosecuted. So historically, you know, we've treated immigration violations as civil violations. They still are civil violations, but there's also criminal charges that can be brought for illegal entry, which is a misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. Or if there have been prior illegal entries, it can be charged as a felony. So what Sessions has said is that everyone coming will be charged, criminally charged and prosecuted for illegal entry.
Just for crossing the border. We've got a question about that. Casey from Milwaukee, welcome to the program, Casey. What is your question?
Hi. I don't have a question. I have a statement.
Okay.
So the policy of separating parents from their children when they cross over into the United States has been a policy that's been in place for quite a few years, since Obama was in office. And I find it interesting that the coverage of this issue, this recent coverage of this issue, has made it kind of a partisan issue, and making it, you know, if the average person didn't know any better, they would think that Trump put this policy in place to separate children from their parents, and that's just not the case. This was happening when Obama was president, and I don't remember the media ever covering it or demonizing Obama over it.
Okay.
So I find that to be very interesting.
Fatma, was the Obama administration separating people when they crossed the border?
So no. So Casey, that's actually not correct. There was no policy under the Obama administration to separate children. But you know,
Fatma, we seem to have
policy separate children. What he said is we will criminally prosecute the parents, and what that means under our system is when a parent is criminally prosecuted, they can't have their kid with them in jail. So the side effect of that is that these kids are going to be separated.
So
and that is a new policy, the zero tolerance, the criminal prosecution. That is a new policy that Sessions announced just a couple months ago.
So Obama did deport a lot of people. He deported more people than George W. Bush than any president before him. But he did not arrest them simply for crossing the border, therefore triggering their children being taken away from them.
Certainly people were charged. In fact, you know, there are more federal prosecutions for immigration and have been, including under Obama, than for any other group of crimes. So people have been criminally prosecuted, but not as sort of this new zero tolerance policy is basically taking that, ramping that up to a new level where they're saying everyone is going to be prosecuted.
Now, isn't this a law that has been on the books since 1986 and has just been ignored?
There's no law that requires separation.
But I guess the law says that when you cross the border, you can be arrested. This has been a law that's been enforced.
Yes, there's certainly been criminal laws in place for a long time.
We are talking with Fatma Maarouf. She's the director of the Immigrants' Rights Clinic at Texas A&M. And Nino Garuli is a lecturer at an International Human Rights Fellow at the University of Chicago. Are you in favor of congressional action to stop kids from being taken from their parents? Are you against it? 1-800-642-1234 is our number. Ideas at WPR.org is our email. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're going to be back in a moment to talk about what is happening for asylum seekers, what Congress is going to be doing about it. We're going to be taking your calls, and we've got some tweets coming in. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We are talking about immigration in the U.S., specifically child immigration and migration, what is happening to children as they are crossing the border. With us is Fatma Maarouf from Texas A&M and Nina Garuli from the University of Chicago. And we are taking your calls and tweets, 1-800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org or WPR Mornings. I just want to get, before we get back to this, Fatma, somebody Jay tweeted at WPR Mornings, "This is a travesty. How is this even legal? And how have we managed to lose track of children?" And again, we haven't really lost track of children, have we?
No. So these children were released to sponsors, and 30 days later, there was no call back from the sponsors. That's all we know about these kids.
And actually, it's a good thing that it may be a good thing for them that the government doesn't necessarily know where they are, because they may be living with people who are themselves undocumented. Yes?
That's true. The concern would be that, they are taken to their immigration court hearings, because most of these kids have probably been placed in deportation proceedings. And if they don't go to court, they'll be ordered deported automatically. So, one would hope that whoever is their guardian is keeping the court informed of their address so they can show up and apply for asylum or whatever else they might be eligible for.
So this is just maybe even a case of people making a phone call, not really following up on the phone call. They didn't think it was that important, and perhaps the press is making it more important than it seems that it is?
Right. I think, the timing of this story with the separation of children has confused people to think that these children are lost because their parents were taken away. But these children entered by themselves. These were unaccompanied minors, so they did not come in with their parents, so there's no issue with them being separated.
And they've been here for a little while.
Yeah.
There have been reports of some asylum seekers, people who are who have human rights issues that they are escaping from. They cross the border and they try to do the right thing and go to the immigration authorities, and they are also arrested and they're separated from their families. Tell me about what's going on there.
Yeah, that's a major concern, because people have a right to seek asylum under international law and under U.S. law. So the idea of sort of criminally prosecuting people for coming here and seeking asylum is pretty outrageous. We've always thought and said that people can come to the U.S. any way they can to seek asylum. It doesn't matter if someone enters undocumented or with a fake passport. Once they come and, are able to reach the U.S., if they ask for asylum, they should be given a right to apply. There's not really been a history of criminally prosecuting people for illegal entry in those circumstances. So the lawsuit that the ACLU filed challenging the separation of families, and one of the plaintiffs in that lawsuit was a Congolese woman who was separated from her 7-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
When she tried to apply for asylum, they were separated for many months. So, that's one of the cases where they were not reunited until after the lawsuit was filed. They didn't even do a DNA test until the lawsuit was filed, so it doesn't seem like there was really any concern about her actually being the mother. I think that's more of a pretext.
One of the arguments, that they kept them apart for 7 months. The child was in Chicago. The mother was, I think, in California.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the arguments for, we don't know, we can't put them back together because we don't know if this is actually the mother, even though they were together and they took them apart.
Correct. Yeah.
Is there something that's going to be done about this issue for asylum seekers?
Well, so the lawsuit is seeking a nationwide injunction, so it's a class action. So if the court grants an injunction, that could stop the government from separating families in this way. At this point, we're just sort of waiting to see what happens in that case. There might be additional litigation that's filed now in other cases as well.
Dianne Feinstein last week said she's trying to fix this separation issue. What can the Senate actually do at this point?
The main thing is the zero tolerance policy, which is coming from the Attorney General. They could try to pass this. This is more of an executive policy, mm-hmm, rather than any type of legislation. But certainly, some type of comprehensive immigration reform bill could help alleviate some of these issues by creating legal paths for people to come, which currently there aren't many ways for people to come, or, to iron out some of the wrinkles in our asylum process. So, it's probably more a matter of influencing the Department of Homeland Security and the Attorney General to directly address the zero tolerance policy.
So when families come over the border and they are separated, let's be clear here, they are arrested for the misdemeanor of crossing the border. And when you are arrested, then your children are taken away because you have to go to jail. Where are these children taken?
So they are taken to the same types of shelters that unaccompanied minors are taken. These are shelters run by the Office of Refugee Resettlement. Some are taken, from Texas all the way to Chicago, but most of the Texas children I've seen have remained in Texas in shelters here. But they could be taken anywhere in the country.
We've got Dana from Oshkosh. Dana, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I just have a quick question. The general MO of the Republican administration has seemed to have been keeping taxes down and expenditures down. But this new policy that they want to put in place that will criminalize people crossing the border, it seems that now we would be supporting them in prison, spending lots of money to support them in their years in prison. Seems like not what they would want to happen, almost like they're shooting themselves in the foot.
So we're making government bigger by increasing our prison populations. Fatma, can you speak to that? Are these people in prison for very long?
No. So for the most part, they've been sentenced to time served, about 20, 25 days. So it's not that they're serving very long sentences, which is another reason it's not like much is being accomplished by criminally prosecuting them.
Right.
The separation of the kids might be very well the worst thing that happens to them, and that's sort of what makes it seem like that's the intent, to deter people from crossing because that's what's going to happen. But the caller has a great point about cost in that, immigration detention itself is extremely expensive. It costs anywhere from $120 a night, to like $180 a night, which is like basically putting someone up in a nice hotel for every day for months on end or however long they may be detained, and we detain 30,000 people a day about. So it is a huge expense to keep people detained.
What do you make of John Kelly's statement that the kids will go to foster care or whatever?
Well, the "or whatever" is somewhat disturbing. You know, it's as if they don't really know or care what's happening to these kids. If there is somebody who can take the kids, another family member or some type of sponsor, they can release the kids to that person. Otherwise, you know, they will be likely kept in the system for unaccompanied minors in those shelters.
We're going to get to the shelters in a moment. We are doing an update on immigrant children in the U.S. There have been many reports about immigrant children who have been crossing the borders with their families and taken away from their families as their parents have been arrested. What do you think about this zero tolerance policy, taking kids from their parents at the border? Should people be prosecuted simply for crossing the border, or should they just be turned around? And what about asylum seekers? Call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Fatma Maarouf, we heard Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen talk to John Burnett last month, and she had of NPR, and she had this to say about her agency's decision to separate families who cross the border without proper documentation.
The pushback in terms of us enforcing the law is inappropriate and unacceptable. If somebody wants a different law, they should go to Congress and get a different law passed. But we took an oath and we will uphold the laws of this country.
It's the law. It's the law. It's the law. They are breaking the law. And we are a nation of laws. What is your answer to that?
Well, prosecutors have always had discretion over, you know, who they arrest and for what. So it's not that every single person who smokes pot will be arrested or must be arrested for that. And it's never been that every single person who crosses the border must be arrested. And so they're basically deciding to use limited resources to prosecute this crime of illegal entry instead of focusing those resources on much more severe crimes, including, you know, violent crimes, drug offenses. So, you know, people should keep in mind that if this is where we're putting our money, then there's other things, other crimes that we might actually care more about and be more worried about. Those other crimes are not going to be prosecuted at the same level.
And those other crimes don't necessarily have anything to do with immigration.
No, I mean, I think most people would be more concerned about violent crimes in their area than somebody entering illegally who poses no safety or criminal risk. I think most people would rather have the government prosecute, you know, the violent crimes.
It's strange to me that President Trump is blaming Democrats for this policy. I feel like I may be missing something here. Does he really think that Democrats have actually done something to affect this policy? Or is he saying, hey, we're going to do this really harsh thing until you give in and start giving us what we want on immigration?
Yeah, that seems to be the only connection. I mean, there really is no there's no way to say the Democrats created this policy. That's just not a fact. So I think all he's saying is by not supporting my version of, you know, immigration reform, you're making this happen, which is, you know, a very sort of twisted interpretation.
Tom from Madison, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
My comment and maybe a little bit of a question is, we've seen from the very beginning of the Trump campaign to this morning that almost every action that the administration takes has got some racial component to it. And it just seems to have a commonality of attacking the people with the least amount of power and those who are seen as the other. And it just seems there's a racist dog whistle to a racist siren when it comes to most of the actions of the Trump administration.
Fatma, there is racism in the Trump administration. This is what Tom is saying. This is what we have heard from many people around this country. Do you think this is what is driving the immigration issue?
I think there's is certainly a factor, and I think we've seen explicit evidence of racism against immigrants and detainees in particular. There was a recent case I worked on in Texas where, you know, there were a group of men from Somalia, and they were explicitly called all sorts of racist names, you know, the N-word, monkey, animal, these kinds of comments, and Trump himself has called immigrants animals, so... you know, this language is being tolerated, whether or not it's, you know, explicitly driving immigration policy. I would say it's at least implicitly driving it.
You know, the language, but this did, it wasn't Trump who was treating these Somali refugees in this way. It was people who worked for Homeland Security, right?
This was actually a privately run immigration detention center, so it was. Yeah, it was guards there and who have a contract with ICE. And there were also ICE officials present who knew what was going on and didn't do anything about it.
So this is going to bring us to detention centers. And I'm going to bring in Nino Garuli from the University of Chicago. Nino, you did a study with the ACLU about how children were treated in detention centers from 2009 to 2014. And this is when Obama was president. So talk to me about what you and the ACLU found in this study.
Absolutely. Yeah, so that's right, Carrie. We did this began when the ACLU made a FOIA request from Department of Homeland Security for any documents that related to complaints or records about child abuse or treatment of children in Department of Homeland Security custody. And after years of litigation, they started receiving documents, and they got, I think, starting from 2015, there were some 30,000 records from various agencies, with sub-agencies within Department of Homeland Security. So we have the Customs and Border Protection, ICE, and then oversight agencies like the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties and Office of Inspector General. And these records come from 2009 to 2014 and capture that year, 2014, where there was a rise in unaccompanied minors. And it documents complaints that were made by children who were held in the custody of Customs and Border Protection. So the clinic here at the University of Chicago worked on a subset of those documents, not the whole 30,000, but a subset that came from Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties that took in a lot of these complaints coming in from service providers and from the Office of Refugee Resettlement on behalf of children who had been in Customs and Border Protection custody.
Okay, so the Office of Refugee Resettlement actually is bringing these charges on behalf of the kids against another federal agency.
So they're lodging complaints. Yes, that's right. Okay. So the way it works is the Department of Homeland Security initially has unaccompanied children in custody, and they're, you know, legally required to transfer them after 72 hours. And then they are transferred to the Department of Health and Human Services and the Office of Refugee Resettlement so that they can find sponsors and place them in the least restrictive kind of setting possible.
Okay, so how many kids are we talking about, and what happened to them in these detention centers?
So it's actually difficult to tell how many kids. A lot of the documents that came from the Customs and Border Protection, as you can imagine, are redacted, both in terms of case numbers and children's names and the names of officers that were involved in these incidents. But it's definitely, it's hard to say exactly. It's in the hundreds, and they come from... So the children speak to ORR representatives and sometimes to legal service providers, and it's these representatives who then transcribe or basically write down what the children say happened and then submit these complaints to the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties.
Okay, so let's get what happened.
Yeah, so there's it's really startling and horrendous kind of abuse that happens at almost every stage of a child's being held by Department of Homeland Security. So they are apprehended, usually by Customs and Border Protection officials or Border Patrol agents. At that stage, we have cases of children being, you know, tased, children being hit and punched and kicked and being held down and having people thrown on top of them. There's even a case of a child being run over by a CBP car. Then there are complaints that talk about conditions when they are housed in Customs and Border Protection facilities, And these are, I mean, the kinds of violations that are in these complaints are really, really staggering. They go from anywhere from being held in freezing cells for days and given not enough food or water. When they are given food and water, it can be tainted. Or be so over-chlorinated, for example, the water that it's you know, undrinkable, or even food that's spoiled, you know, that a bologna sandwich, for example, where the bologna is turned yellow in the middle completely. There was a case of a young mother who had a child with her and asked for milk and was given spoiled milk, which then led to her child, you know, being incredibly ill and leading to, you know, dehydration and hospitalization. And there are complaints about physical abuse and sexual abuse and just really terrible verbal abuse as well in detention during this period where they're held in Customs and Border Protection custody.
Physical abuse, people actually beaten up by Border Patrol agents, run over in cars by Border Patrol agents.
Yeah, there are complaints of, you know, there's one of a child that was already on the ground, and he was tased by a Border Patrol agent. And then, you know, the Border Patrol agent stood on his legs and kicked him in the stomach. I mean, they're really just really violent incidents that are in these documents.
And sexual abuse, there are, I saw one about a girl who was forced to spread her legs and touched inappropriately. Is there any more?
There is. There's threats of sexual abuse, which is also really, I mean, is startling and difficult to read. I mean, there are children being threatened with being put in a detention cell with adults that they don't know are related to and being told you will be raped. There are other incidents of a child being touched by a CBP official, you know, someone putting a hand between, you know, below their stomach, and just abuses like that.
Fatma, we are talking about children who are being detained for less than a week, but going through this. Are you surprised, given all of the people that you have dealt with who have gone through detention, how they were treated?
Well, I mean, these are certainly things that we have seen happen all over the country at different detention centers. So these are very consistent with the types of abuses I've seen against adults. I think, you know, seeing this documentation of it happening against children is particularly shocking. But the types of things that are being described are not unusual.
And as you have been representing people, what is it that you see? I mean, this is during the Obama administration. So what is it that you see that is driving this kind of behavior?
I think, you know, immigrants are in a very vulnerable position, and people who have authority over them, it's very easy for them to abuse their authority because there's usually no consequence. So because so many people end up being deported, or even if they're not deported, they don't usually file lawsuits or even complaints. The complaints that we have are probably just a fraction of the abuses that exist. So they're getting away with it constantly, and it really, you know, I think it's when people can sort of abuse their authority in that way and feel that kind of power, they do it, and it's, you know, it is horrific.
We are talking about immigration and specifically immigration issues facing children as they cross the border right now in the U.S. We are taking your calls at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. We have a couple of emails and phone calls ready to go when we come back. It's The Morning Show. Yeah. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. We're talking today about immigration and children coming to this country with Fatma Maarouf and Nino Garuli. We were just talking about immigration detention centers. I should note that Customs and Border Protection, Nino, which was overseeing these centers, categorically denies the accusations in your report. They put out a pretty forceful statement that said, in part, the false accusations made by the ACLU against the previous administration are unfounded and baseless. The report, which has quotes around it, the report equates allegations with fact. Like, it's not a report. I don't know. The report equates allegations with fact, flatly ignores a number of improvements made by U.S. Customs and Border Protection, and further alleges that the report contains a number of anecdotal assertions and does not provide specifics, preventing the CPB from commencing reasonable steps to examine these assertions and addressing their concerns. What is your answer to that?
It's hard to know where to start. One, it's to say that these are just allegations is to add insult to injury. I mean, that's all they can be when there is no investigation that actually, no real investigations. I mean, these offices that are charged with reviewing and taking in these complaints are limited in their mandate, right? They don't actually have the authority to do very much. They can ask CBP for records. They can do an investigation from what we can tell is incredibly dependent on the CBP itself. So basically asking the officials who are being complained about, did this happen? Mm. Show us, are there any records you have that confirm the child's story? And when they find no records or the CBP officials don't confirm what the child, what is in the complaint, then these complaints are closed. And that's the extent of it. Both the Office of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties and Office of Inspector General don't have the authority to do much more than investigate and then make a report about that investigation and then make recommendations about how to change policy.
Okay, so essentially what's happening is we're saying the children are saying X abused me, and then they make a complaint, and the people investigating go to X and say, did you abuse that person? And X says, no, I didn't do that at all. And they say, okay, case closed. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, you know, not too much more than that. And I would encourage anyone who is, who has read the CBP's response and who is interested in this just to go look at the documents. I mean, it is true that they're so redacted. It is at times incredibly difficult to follow any one investigation through. But there are, document after document that of CRCL basically asking the relevant CBP station and officials saying, can you look into this complaint? Send us any records from these days and from these stations. And then when they see nothing in the records or the CBP official says, I don't remember or I definitely didn't do that, that seems to be the end of the investigation. And in which case, this is not an independent investigation. There is no, it doesn't look to be any sort of use of information or of tools outside of just relying on what CBP provides. And under those circumstances, I mean, how can these be anything but allegations when there isn't any sort of independent investigation of child abuse?
Is there a way that, maybe you can answer this, Fatma, is there a way that there can be independent monitors in these detention centers since it seems to be happening in many of them?
That's certainly something that can be requested, but it's hard to have people there all the time. In the case we saw in the West Texas Detention Center with the Somali detainees, we asked the U.S. attorney to criminally investigate, and they referred the investigation over back to the Office of the Inspector General within the Department of Homeland Security, so one of the same agencies that, was being sort of not doing the investigations thoroughly for the abuse against the kids. So, it's hard when you can't get an outside sort of somebody with authority to actually criminally or civilly prosecute to look at the case. Then it's always going to be an internal body looking at it, and there's not really a strong incentive to actually, fire people or have people face the consequences. And one of the things we actually discovered was some of the employees working there had actually themselves been convicted for battery and other offenses. So, and they were still hired for those jobs.
Interesting. We have actually David in Lancaster emailed us. He goes back to the separating children from their families. Separating children from parents defies all that we know about healthy human development with family within family systems. The practice of separating families at our border is inhumane. Separating families goes beyond the purpose of border control and adds to the problem of children becoming part of the disorder and violence in our world. Which brings me to the what are the long-term psychological effects of these kids who are separated from their parents, and are we doing anything to take care of that? Fatma?
I mean, the studies have shown that this causes toxic stress in children. It can have lifelong developmental and neurological consequences. I think, you know, attached to the ACLU lawsuit, there were affidavits from the you know, the American Academy of Pediatricians sort of detailing the types of consequences it has. And, you know, we know it's in the literature that separating kids from their parents, even for short periods of time, you know, when these are young kids, can have profound lifelong consequences on their development.
Deanna in Milwaukee, welcome to the program.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, I have been an MPS teacher in the Spanish bilingual program for about 25 years.
Mm.
And, the effects on the kids not being detained at the border, that I don't know as much about, but just in their everyday lives being undocumented, they're afraid if the police come to the door. I've had parents ask me to sign papers to be their temporary guardians if they would get arrested. They're afraid to play outside. They've been traumatized already in their own countries. Then to come here and be treated like this is really upsetting to me.
Has this gotten worse in the last few years?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've had my students the last few years. I teach fifth grade. You know, ask me, why does everybody hate them? Why do white people hate them? Why do they make fun of them? Why do they think that their parents are criminals? I've never signed legal papers before to, you know, agree to be in charge of the kids if they would get arrested. That's a very new phenomenon, I'd say, in the last 2 years.
And are you seeing it within the school? Are they being bullied in the school from other kids?
No, because the schools are predominantly Hispanic, So they're all kind of in the same boat. But, I mean, I feel like if they leave their neighborhoods, yeah, they feel conspicuous. There's been a lot of parents telling me that now if they speak Spanish outside of their, you know, kind of south side area where they live, people are telling them, well, you need to speak English. And I think it's become really intolerant, and I feel really bad because the kids just crossing the border over the years have told me stories of seeing dead bodies floating in the, you know, Rio Grande, and, you know, kids from Honduras, decapitated bodies on their street. I mean, they're already traumatized. They come here. They're made to feel like they're unwanted. They're in fear of being discovered. And then they have to listen to all the stuff on the news about how their parents are rapists and criminals. And I don't know, I'm listening to all the things happening in these detention centers, and it makes me sick. I mean, nobody would want this for their own kids. I don't understand why the general population doesn't understand. Yeah, the kids might speak another language, but they're families and kids just like we are. They love their kids. They want the best for them. And all the stuff that is going on, it's heartbreaking to me, and I can't believe the lack of compassion towards them. It's awful.
Deanna, thank you very much for calling. I appreciate it. Fatma, this speaks to, is this just a lack of people, white people, essentially, in the U.S., not really understanding what is going on in Central America and what these kids are fleeing from?
Well, first, I don't think it's limited to white people. I mean, I think even in areas with large Latino populations, there can be discrimination by legal, you know, Latinos who are U.S. citizens or permanent residents against undocumented. We certainly have a lot of that in Texas, so... You know, but more broadly, I do think people don't understand what these conditions are like. And I think, you know, the caller described them really well, that it's not just the, you know, horrific violence they're fleeing, but then also crossing the border itself is a traumatic experience in which people risk their lives. And then, you know, the abuse they face when they get here is just the last part of that. So it's a whole history of these incredible stressors on these kids, and all of that makes them so traumatized by the time they get here. And then on top of that, we're inflicting all of this trauma in the detention centers and, at the border.
We've got John from Racine, who brings up an interesting question. John, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the entire program. I'm thinking is all the more reason that we need tighter border securities. We need a wall. We need to keep these people out, to do them a favor. All these abuses in the detention centers and all these separation of families and all these problems would be solved if they couldn't get over here in the first place. If we had Germany trying to get in, or Poland or anything like that, or we tried to go to their countries and demand rights and driver's licenses and health care, they would laugh at us. So it's about time we put our foot down. Enough is enough. This is the United States. If you want to get in, apply legally for asylum.
Okay, so that's an interesting question. I'm going to cut you off here. First of all, Fatma, a lot of people do come into Germany. Germany has accepted a lot of asylum seekers, mostly from North Africa over the years. But the legal part of this is the interesting part to me. I do not know, I know a lot about this. I do not know how one would legally apply for asylum. So do the people coming from Central America and Mexico know the difference between crossing the border and going up to a Border Patrol agent and say, hey, I'm here, I'm applying for asylum, or some other way to go through government systems?
That is how you apply for asylum.
That is how you apply.
That
just
is how
cross
you apply
the border.
For asylum. You can't apply for asylum while you're still in the country that you're seeking asylum from. You have to go to the country. You have to come to the United States and apply for asylum here.
So do we have like a front door with lots of sparklies on it that says, asylum seekers, come here. And if you come through that door, we will treat you a certain way and we will listen to your case. And if you go through this back door, which we don't want anybody going into, we're gonna send you home or maybe even treat you badly. Do we make it clear to people?
No, and most of the women and kids coming in are turning themselves in as soon as they cross the border and asking for asylum. A lot of people are not trying to sort of, come in surreptitiously. They're actually going up through the control points, or as soon as they come in, turning themselves over to the first border official they see and asking for asylum. So that is actually the legal process. If we sort of created this wall to keep everybody out, that would be a serious interference with the international human right to seek asylum.
So, John, what do you say to that? That the way to create asylum, the way to apply for asylum is to cross the border and ask for it.
Well, this is automatically assuming they have the right to be here anyway. You know, this is like we can accept anybody just as long as you apply correctly. I want to go back to square one and say, we have our own problems in our country, you have yours. Create a wall and all the problems end.
So you don't want anybody coming into our country ever?
Illegally.
Okay. Thank you for calling. I appreciate that perspective. Fatma, a lot of these we've talked about President Obama and his deportation policies. How are they different? How many people got deported under Obama that aren't being deported under Trump? I guess my question is Trump deporting more people?
So there was certainly an extremely high number of deportations under Obama, the highest ever, about 400,000 or more a year. We are continuing to deport a very large number of people. I don't actually know how the statistics compare, but I don't think anybody would say that Obama didn't deport a lot of people. The question isn't so much are people being deported, it's how they're being treated at the border.
I'm going to stop you there.
Total lack of discretion.
I'm going to stop you there. We have been talking about children crossing the border. You just heard Fatma Maarouf. She is the director of Texas A&M's Immigration Rights Clinic. Nino Garuli, who you heard earlier, is a lecturer of international human rights and a fellow at the University of Chicago. Both of you, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt.
The Morning Show is produced by Colleen Leahy, Brianne Shasho, Chris Molina, Laura Pavin, and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer is our technical director. Keely Boltina is the executive producer. I'm Carrie Kaufman, and this is the Ideas Network.